Yo, 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 Punk News. You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of April 2nd, one day after April Fool's, April 2nd, 2014. Let's go. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is features editor John Gentile, and I'm bringing back the yo-yo-yo because we got a jam-packed news week. A lot of news happened this week, a lot to talk about, so we're going to go pretty quickly. And with me here is Mr. Reasonable, Mr. Thoughtful, Mr. Socrates himself, Mr. Even-Keeled, Mr. Adam White. Adam, what's happening? How's the teaching going, man? Are you giving out any D's and F's lately?
I don't actually have to mark these kids, so I just kind of like breeze through it. I got someone helping me that's actually doing the heavy lifting. So I just show up and talk at them, and which totally fits my egotistical need to be the center of attention. And then I go home, which is great.
Do you wear like a backwards hat, like a baseball jersey and Jenko jeans?
No, I'm not teaching 1990s suburban shopping mall studies, so I can't wear that. I dress like a...
Adam with the quick zinger. Adam, that's why I love you. Always with the quick zinger.
That's it for tonight, by the way. Like, I am tired and just crushed by the weight of the world, so I'm just going to be a complete puddle of uselessness for the next hour. So,
well, thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Adam, what's wrong, man? Is something wrong, or are you just tired from parenting and teaching and being the world's most foremost expert in punk rockology?
No, I was just, you know, one of those days where by the time we were done our you know, running around and whatnot and got some food in us, it was like 40 minutes ago. So I'm just I'm in shutdown mode. So let's make this happen.
All right, and that person laughing is a rising star at Punk News, the man who men want to be and women want to be with, the man who everyone's got their eye on and they expect big things from. With us is Tricky Ricky Frankel. Ricky, what's happening? What's happening?
Hey, how's it going? Thank you. That was awesome.
So
yeah, I'm good.
Ricky, I know you're in the middle of studying for, as Adam White would say, university, but, you know, I've been in the Bay Area the past couple of weeks. I'll be here for a few more weeks, and man, I kind of went a little crazy. Bay Area has got best record stores in the world. So Ricky, I mean, have you picked up anything sweet lately in the Bay Area?
In the Bay Area, I mean, I haven't...
Or in L.A., because you were in L.A. not too long ago. Like, what's better, you think, Ricky, L.A. or SF? I think SF is better, or Bay Area, rather.
You know, I think, the thing is, yeah, I think SF is better. I mean, you have, because there's so many that are close to each other, while in L.A., it's just so spread apart. Like, I can go, if you go down Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, you just can go to Amoeba, then right to Rasputin's, and then walk down that avenue and find a few more. So I think just for you know, simplicity, for sure, it's the NorCal.
Have you gotten any hot finds lately?
Okay, let me see here. Well, okay, so some of them I got. Yeah, actually, you'll appreciate probably. I got three. You'll probably appreciate all three.
Oh, you got Hanson's first, second, and third album.
No, I got off live at the 9:30 club.
Oh, no, you know, that's a fairly rare record.
Yeah, I was lucky to get it.
That record's really good.
I love it. And then I pre-ordered the Morning Glory album, and for some reason, Fat just sends it to you where your billing address, so I had to wait to go back home to get it back. But I finally got it up here, and it is the silver vinyl of War Songs. And then this one was insanely hard to find. I had to get this one on eBay. It was the Misfits American Psycho vinyl.
Oh, wow. Well, how much you pay for that? Like $60?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sweet. Really rare. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like it's on 220 gram vinyl, and it took me forever to find, but,
that's from like 97, right? Or like, no, that's from like 2001, that pressing, right?
No, this is the 97 promo edition, actually.
Oh, wow.
220. That's like a 2x4.
It's heavy. Yeah, it's heavy. But I haven't listened to it, but I'm excited for those. Those are the three I got.
How about you, Adam? Adam, have you gotten any hot records lately?
Only that I've picked up at a show. I haven't been to a store lately.
What'd you get
so this
shows?
Past this past this past week was well it was my birthday, which is very important.
Well,
but
more
important,
happy birthday, Adam White. Happy birthday to
happy
you.
Happy birthday.
Yes. I'm now old.
Do you feel as old as you are? I never feel as old as I am.
No, we'll see. I do now because this plays right into getting this record. So there was a show in St. Catharines here, which was the local place where I go to see shows, local venue called Detour. It's my good friend's book. And the Dirty Nail, one of my favorite bands locally, was playing the EP release show for their EP Smite that came out. And we played a song from it on the podcast a couple weeks ago called Wrestle You to Husker Du. So the Nail were there. They released Smite. I picked up a copy of it there. It's great. It's on white vinyl. It's pretty cool. Anyways, I'm there and I'm standing around watching the bands. Oh, and actually one of the bands that opened for the Nil was this band out of Toronto that I'd never seen before called the Beverleys that play this. I was coming into it thinking it was going to be a little bit like Vivian Girls for some reason, which is just totally me going, oh, it's a three piece of women. So they're going to sound like Vivian Girls,
sexist.
Which is totally bad. I know, but they were insanely loud, like crunchy and loud and great and just like completely not what I was expecting in the best way. So anyways, you should check out the Beverleys. It was cool. I'm standing there watching the bands play and some teenagers, I guess, came up to me as I'm standing there and they're like, hey, can you go buy us some beer? And I'm like, wow, I am old. This is the moment. I'm at a show and kids are asking me to buy them beer. This is my moment. Now, I have this beard now that I assume makes me look older than it probably does without. But regardless, I'm officially now old because kids want me to buy them beer.
Did you buy them beer?
So you know what I said to them? I said to them, sorry, guys. And then I went and got myself a beer.
Did you drink it in front of them? Were you like, yeah. Oh.
More or less, wasn't intentionally, and then I like am standing there drinking it, and I turn and there's like the kid next to me. And I'm like,
oh,
ah.
This beer is so good. Oh, I can taste the hops.
It was one of those things where like my buddies booked the show. You know, I was there prior to even like the sound check because we were hanging out before they got going. So I was like talking to the bartender beforehand. So the bartender knows who I am. My buddies are booking the thing. They know I have no reason to go buy like three beers at a time unless I have some sort of problem that I've just developed. So I don't want to screw like the only guys in town that are booking good shows around here because like they get raided and some kids are drinking underage, you know, that wouldn't be cool of me. So those guys just had to go, you know, smoke in the alley afterwards or something. So I couldn't help them.
Adam White single-handedly brings the Canadian punk rock scene to a screeching halt through underage.
I know. I just killed the whole party. Anyway, so I got a copy of Smite, the new EP by the Dirty Mill at this show. And I'm happy with that. This, however, is a big, there's a lot of trepidation this week. There's a lot of potential excitement in my life because on the last week of December of 2013, I went and I ordered a new turntable from this company out of Boston called U-Turn Audio that started out of like a Kickstarter project. And it's these, I don't know, MIT engineer kids that are making like audiophile quality turntables or so it's billed for a relatively cheap price. So I ordered one of these suckers and they've been back ordered for like 3 months because there's been such demand for these things, really well reviewed and all that. But this is my week. This is supposed to be shipping week.
Nice.
And there's this little thing on their website where they're like, shipping week is coming. And if you ordered between X and X, this is your week. And this is my week. So I'm just waiting, refreshing my email to see like some sort of shipping notification. Hasn't happened yet. It's Wednesday. I'm a little nervous, but this is the week.
Right. Well, good luck, Adam. I've been up in the Bay Area lately, so I've been going crazy, man. I've been to Streetlight Records. I've been to three different Streetlight Records. I've been to two different Rasputin Records. I've been to Amoeba, and man, I mean, it's crazy. Oh, I've been to three Rasputins. No, I've been to four Streetlight Records. I've been to four Streetlight Records, two Rasputins, and an Amoeba. And it's crazy. And I got some really sweet finds. I got like the Chumbawamba Tub Thumping single, which sounds cheesy, but I actually think the song's pretty good. But it's got this Chumbawamba always loads their singles with like B-sides, and it's got this track called Farewell to the Crown, which you can find on YouTube. It is a kick-ass song. So if you really want to know what mid-period Chumbawamba is like, you got to check it out. I also got Crime, Murdered by Guitar, 1976 to 1980. A lot of listeners might not know Crime, but Crime is kind of considered the first San Francisco punk rock band. And they're loud, noisy, aggressive, kind of like the Stooges, but they're like really berserk. And like these are some of their song titles, like Murdered by Guitar, Baby, You're So Repulsive, Piss on Your Dog, If Looks Could Kill, San Francisco's Doomed, like, you know, really aggressive, you know, three-chord American-style punk rock. And really, this is the first time their actual releases have been released. They only put out three singles, and a while after that, they put out a demos collection. But it was really, really hard to get their three singles. Well, this has all three of their singles, plus some outtakes. So it's basically like a full album's worth of Crime material, which has never been heard before, and it's really some of the best punk rock you'll ever hear. Along those lines, I also got the Danger House complete singles collection. Kids may or may not know Danger House. Danger House was a very short-lived LA label, but they put out the first Avengers 7-inch, I think. They put out the Dills, they put out the Weirdos, the Alley Cats, Black Randy and the Metro Squad, just the Alice in the Bags, like just awesome LA style, sort of germs as punk rock. So, I mean, this is a fantastic compilation, one of the best punk rock compilations I've heard, and X is on it. I mean, really, this was a compilation that needed to exist. It's all the singles ever put out by Danger House in order. I got a CD by Ranking Dread. The kids might not know Ranking Dread, but Ranking Dread's a bad man. He was one of the early dancehall guys. And on the album cover, the album's called Lots of Love. Sly and Robbie, a very famous Jamaican duo, do drums and bass, of course, as always. And who produced this? Was it Earl Chin who produced this? Sugar Minot produced this. Sugar Minot is a very famous Jamaican soul singer. And on the cover, it's like Ranking Dread, like a bunch of kids saying like he's someone of the community. But Ranking Dread was a literal gangster. He got like arrested like three times in three different countries for like selling drugs and like shooting people and robbing like supermarkets and stuff. And he's not a nice, like he slashed his girlfriend's face up with a razor. So he's a bad, bad dude. And eventually he died, I think, in a shootout or in prison or something. So it's a very interesting artifact, and it's a good album, despite that he's a bad, bad man. So people think Ben Weasel's bad. Rankin Dread's way worse. Second to last thing, I got probably one of the rarest CDs in my entire collection. I got Bauhaus Live in the Studio, 1979, which is super rare. They only made a couple hundred of these. And what it is, it's Bauhaus's first demo recordings that they made, and two songs on it were never released anywhere else, which is like super cool. So I'm super psyched to have this. I've been looking for this for 10 years, literally. Last thing on my list, I got the Smiths, There's a Light That Never Goes Out CD single. And this is interesting because it's got two tracks, including one of my favorite Smiths tracks, Live, that I don't think you can get anywhere else. It's got Hand in Glove Live, which is a cool song, but it's got Some Girls Are Bigger Than Others Live, which is one of Morrissey's weirder songs. I don't even know what it's about. I think it might be like a proto I Like Big Butts song, but I don't know for sure. So that's cool to have. The reason I bring that up is we got an email. We got a bunch of emails. You can always get us at podcast@punknews.org. But this is an email we got from Jason Beierstein, and here's what he said. He said, "The Smiths are way more wussy than R.E.M." So do you guys agree? Are the Smiths more wussy than R.E.M.? And I don't know what prompted him to send that, to tell you the truth.
I honestly don't know how to answer that. No, I think I don't think that's true. Probably the Smiths, I think REM is more wussy than the Smiths, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just the very fact that like that Morrissey is a complete lunatic kind of takes them out of that category.
And yeah. We also got an email from, I think it's, Dave from L.A. Here's what Dave from L.A., Brittany Reiser was on recently. Dave from L.A. is a big fan of Brittany Reiser. Here's what he said. He said, "More Britt Reiser. She's funny and articulate. The show needs opinions from people who aren't like me, dudes in their early 30s, just like me and Adam White. As much as I like listening to Adam and John G, I dig the podcast more when the third host isn't in my demographic. So it's a good thing we've got Ricky Frankel here.
Yeah, exactly.
He's actually a third gender from Zimbabwe, I believe. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
And he's trisexual, I believe, correct?
I'll try anything.
And so anyway, Dave says, I enjoy the podcast every week. Keep it up. And also Dave says, more IP lessons. They're super interesting. And this is not sarcasm. So, Dave, thank you very much for the email. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And let's get today's podcast. Oh, we also have to thank Sound Guy Nariman for recording this podcast. As always, Sound Guy Nariman keeping this ship together. Let's get this podcast started. Today's April 2nd, which means yesterday we celebrated April Fools. Every day at Punk News, I mean, not every day, every year at Punk News, we do some sort of April Fools thing. Either we post wacky articles, or we do weird reviews, or we change the site somehow. This year, let me preface. Last year, I was in charge of the April Fool's articles, and I thought last year was okay. I think it was like I would rate it like a C+. Our articles were okay, but not great. So this year, I was a little bit. I planned out a little bit more, and I was a little bit more demanding of our writers. And if you ask me, our writers really came through this year. I think this year was one of the best April Fool's articles. I mean, the selection of April Fool's articles we've ever had. Ricky actually did one called Glenn Danzig Forms His Own Version of the Misfits. And actually, Ricky, that one was a late bloomer. I think that one actually was like the most popular. I mean, it had like something like 300 shares on Facebook.
And
like
I didn't see that.
Like it went viral. So that one went viral, and so did Nirvana's Set to Reunite with Courtney Love. We had a couple others that sort of went viral. Leanne's, Greg Ginn, Lee's Black Flag went viral. These are all fake stories. That went viral.
That was fantastic.
And Fest to Be Drug and Alcohol Free this year went viral too. So I think we did a good job this year. Were there any stories that you guys liked or you guys think we could have done better? What do you guys think?
I think that it was entirely it was maybe a bit predictable, but it was entirely appropriate for us to just goof on Black Flag the whole time.
We were really hard on Black Flag this year.
So they deserve it. They do. They just have to kind of live with that. If they want to like make themselves into some sort of weird parody band, then when it's comedy time, we're going to use them as material because it's easy. So that's too bad for Black Flag. I appreciated the sort of subtle absurdity of Chris Farren covers fake problems. Yes. Only because Chris Farren is covering everything, so why not cover fake problems?
That's a Leanne article.
It was the Leanne article. So I like that. That was fun for me. What else do we have? We published a lot this year. It's always weird when we do these things because after the first few, you know, the jig is clearly up to most people, but then we just keep hammering it in and I think that's partly what makes it fun for us is that like, as we go on throughout the morning, people are like, okay, we get it. And we're like, no more.
Well, Adam, so, I'm glad you're bringing it up because I mean, I think this year the articles were very, very strong. So I would say the one, I wouldn't even say this was a majority criticism, but a minority criticism that we had was that we did do too many because the jig was up. And in a way, I agree that, I mean, really, 5 probably would have been better. But on the other hand, I had a bunch of people that wanted to do it and a bunch of people that had good articles. So I didn't want to be a jerk and just say some people couldn't do it just because we had too many. Like you know, as I said before, to me, punk rock is about inclusion. If you want to be part of the club, you can be part of the club. So I didn't want to be like Mr., you know, Times Magazine editor and slash a bunch of people's hard work. You know what I mean? Second thing is,
that was the most articles that we've had go up in a day in a while. So yeah. That's pretty good.
But also, you know, now that like everything is like diaspora'd, that's not how you use that word, but diaspora'd out across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, the later day article ones were actually some of the most successful in tricking people, Tumblr too, and because not everybody comes to the site to actually read the site. So people might go to Tumblr or Facebook to read punk news, and the later day ones are the ones they see first. And so those actually became really popular and tricked a lot of people. So I'm not sure a whole lot really isn't a good way to go, to tell you the truth.
Hey, you know what? I fully embrace the fact that we're just going to go overboard and not stop when reason says that we should, because that doesn't seem very punk rock to me that we stop when, you know, we should just keep going. when people tell us we've clearly lost the plot, I just want to keep going. Which is really like that is that's punk news in a nutshell, right? So
that's punk rock, the middle finger to everybody. So
I gotta tell you, I thought to be honest, the Glenn Danzig one I did was actually inspired by the real Black Flag story. So I started who did the April Fool's Black Flag one?
Leanne did the Greg Ginn quits Black Flag.
I was literally, I almost started crying from laughing at that headline. I was laughing so hard. And I was just looking through the comments and it turns out that there actually is a all female cover band of the Misfits called Misfits that I did not know existed. And I think the best thing is if you click on the shares on Facebook, it's so funny to see people freaking out and taking all of these seriously. And then their friends saying like, dude, it's April Fool's.
So I thought someone was so obvious and people did Courtney Love joins Nirvana. I thought that was so, and some people totally fell for that one, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a good year. It was fun. I don't know, personally me, I completely hate April Fool's Day. It makes the internet completely useless for me because I don't want to look at anything. And it completely wrecks my unhealthy desire to compulsively refresh websites all day. So like I have to actually like go do work and focus on something and I just can't do that. So,
well, I love April Fool's. I love it. I love April Fool's. So anyway, speaking of April Fool's, there was a festival that was also announced on April Fool's that people at first weren't sure if it was an April Fool's joke or not, but it wasn't. Basically, a whole bunch of acts for the Fest 13 have been announced. Fest 13, pre-Fest, will take place October 29 and 30 in Ybor City, and normal Fest will take place October 31 through 2nd in Gainesville, Florida. The headline that everyone's talking about is The Descendants, but also playing over 100 bands are there, but Lifetime's going to be there, Less Than Jake, Strike Anywhere, Menzingers, Chuck Reagan, Tim Barry, Sheep Girls, Nightbirds, Banner Pilot, Flatliners, Lars Stevenson, Broadway Calls, Lemuria, Circle Take Square, Mixtapes, The Holy Mess, Red City Radio, Groovy Ghoulies, and a whole bunch of other bands. Chicks Dig It, Kayatana's going to be there. A lot of bands. Are any of you guys? Mikey Erk is going to be there. Modern Life is War. Murder Burgers. A lot of bands. Are you guys excited about this lineup? Are you guys thinking about going? Marked Men are going to be there. Slackers. Man, a lot of bands.
I have a hard time imagining that I'm actually going to get down there, given kind of the amount of other, people that I'm responsible for caring for in my life these days. But I don't know. Hey, it would be cool. The Descendants would be awesome. The lineup this year actually looks pretty good. There's a lot of stuff that looks really fun. Now, there's a lot of stuff that I think I'm going to get my hit for at Pooza. Like the Nightbirds chicks dig it.
Nightbirds!
That'll be Pooza for me. I think Nightbirds are there. They better be. Anyways, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's really neat this year. Like, man, like a Slackers show at Fest would be great. This is cool. This is a neat lineup. I like this.
Franz Nicolai is going to be there.
It's a great lineup. I mean, oh man, I would love to go. I've never been, just because of like being on the opposite coast. But like, I've always wanted to go. It's just that plane ticket's expensive.
Yeah, it's like $600 for you, right?
Yeah, probably more. Yeah, plus, and also, like, it's weird. Like, of the people I hang out with, they don't know what this is. And I don't know if I could get someone to go with. I'd have to meet some friends from back east there, probably. But I would love to go. Direct Hit's going to be there. Menzingers. Oh, yeah, I'd really want to go to this.
Yeah, so I guess more bands will be announced, and I'm sure that Punk News will have fest-related stuff coming up. Adam, take us off with the next article. Take us off with the next article.
Okay. Do we really need to?
Yeah, we got to talk. Get off the podcast.
All right. Off.
Yes.
Off is streaming the entirety of their third album, Wasted Years, at the New York Times, of all places. The album is due out on April 8th via Vice Records. You can stream the entire record at the Times. You can find a link to it at Punk News. So this is the... This is their second, right? Like, because they have that EP compilation, so it's kind of their. Is it a third? Would you consider this a third?
I would, because the EP compilation was kind of botched, and that it was supposed to be four singles, but they just put out one single and the EP compilation. So it was four new tracks and then eight new tracks with four old tracks. So I call that an album.
All right, let's go with third. This is their third album. We've been talking about it and the songs on it kind of coming up, quite a few weeks until now. It still has some of my favorite cover art ever. John, what is your opinion of Off's Wasted Years?
It's everything that I wanted from this band. Just like the last album is everything that I wanted from them. The albums are even shorter and even harder and even more fractured. I wonder what the cool people are going to review it. With the last Off album, the cool people said, well, they're just doing the same thing they did the first time. But they really didn't. They actually did like a lot of different stuff. Same with this one. I mean, the songs are still short, fast, and aggressive. But here, like, the songs are even more fractured, wild. Keith Moore, I mean, the cliche about Keith Moore is that he's angry. But he is really, 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 really pissed off on this record. Keith Morris is these are probably his best vocal takes ever. Like, Keith Morris still is like a phenomenal, phenomenal singer. Dimitri Coates' guitar is just fractured and wild and more berserk than it's ever been before. I love this record. It's definitely going to be in my top records of the year. I mean, unless like Off releases like 19 other albums this year. But other than that, I mean, this album is great. It's them sticking to their core identity, but doing new things lyrically, sonically, and song structure-wise. It's great.
Yeah, I noticed a couple were like tracks were slower than usual, but other than that, like I didn't mind that at all. Just something a little different. Did either of you order the limited edition red vinyl?
Of course, I did. Album? Get out of here. Get off this.
Okay, I did too. I did too. Did you, Adam?
I order nothing, so okay. No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm gonna leave this one with John. You're the definitive Off voice in the room. I guess I gotta sit down and listen to this sucker myself. So,
honestly, like Adam, if you're not dying to hear, you might want to wait for the album, because the stream seemed to be a little bit lo-fi to me, to tell you the truth. Off albums really.
No, I'm actually quite dying to hear it. I just I've honestly turned on the Punk News part of my brain like 20 minutes ago. So
well, it's awesome. You're gonna love it. You're gonna wreck your house. Make sure your baby's like in another room, because you're gonna start kicking out your TV. You're gonna throw bricks through your own windows. You're gonna light fires. It's gonna be intense, Adam.
Oh, I'm so excited. This is what I want in
it's bizarre. Terms of, and plus, if you don't like it, it's over in about 12 minutes anyways.
So. That's really the best thing. I didn't jump to another thing we got coming out here, just to recap the various old punk personalities that people seem to be excited about these days. Tim Armstrong, a.k.a. Tim Timebomb, has announced the release of a new compilation. The release is simply titled Tim Timebomb and Friends, and it collects 36 tracks that were culled from his Song a Day project that's been running for a good while on his own website. The release, which was previously just a limited physical run in a slightly different form, will now be out digitally on March 15th, 2014. So you can find the full track listing on Punk News. There are, 36 songs on this thing. It's not everything that Tim's done on his Song a Day project. There are notable exceptions and things that people think really should have been on here that are missing.
Mm.
It is a bunch of them. So if you're waiting for that next Rancid record, or I'm going to piss off that guy, for some reason clamoring for more transplants, and you don't have an outlet, this could be your outlet. Oh, that guy's going to email us. Sorry, transplants guy. I can't remember your name right now.
I'll back that guy up. I don't think the transplants are that terrible in general.
I do.
I,
I don't really either. I'm just trying to get people to send us more angry emails. And
about the transplants? We should convert the Punk News podcast to transplant wards. Every week we debate the pros and cons of the transplants.
Okay, so speaking of this record here, so I guess the one thing that the kids in the comment sections were talking about is the collaboration with Jesse Michaels of Classics of Love, Common Rider, Op Ivy, isn't on here. Is that true?
Yes, that is true.
That's like the one thing that I was really super interested in.
Yeah, well, I would guess that it's a legal thing, and that like all the tracks on there are like Tim Armstrong's home recording. So maybe like when he and Jesse Michaels recorded that, they didn't like agree to like a distribution deal, so he just left it off. Or maybe he's got something planned for it. I mean, honestly, a 7-inch of that would be really cool, actually, wouldn't it?
Is anyone else put off by the fact that he covered Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams?
I just looked that up so I could just do it. So hold on, I'm going to just...
I actually got this in physical form when it was available for a brief time in physical form. It came in as 3 CDs with themes. I've actually only listened to one. I've listened to the one that starts with the first 12 tracks in this compilation. I got to say, man, I think it's the best thing that any Rancid member has put out since Rancid 2000. Like, it's like a really fun rock. I remember Tim Armstrong's last thing he put out. Remember, it was like Tim Timebomb and Friends presents Tim Timebomb's Rock and Roll Theater. Those songs were really good, but like he played them like really slowly and like really sedately, and it really killed him. Here, some of these songs really, really rip. Like, Change the Song, Mr. DJ. Although, actually, he already recorded that once before, didn't he? But, I mean, what's really cool is I Want to Get Rid of You, number 5, which is a cover of Psychotic Pineapple, which we played about 4 or 5 weeks ago on the podcast. And so I thoroughly enjoyed this. So if you're a Tim Armstrong fan, like, this is pretty good if you like Tim Armstrong or Rancid. If you're a Rancid fan, you'll enjoy this. It's not like his – like, he – some of these tracks are phoned in, but some of them really rock. So, and that's what I want from Tim Armstrong, is rockin' tunes.
I just think that's so random that he'd choose Summer of 69.
Honestly, I give...
While you guys have been talking, I've listened to exactly 1 minute of Summer of 69. This is really fun.
Well, see, that's what... I think Tim Armstrong...
It's kind of got this like bouncy, almost like honky tonk piano thing going on in it. It's
really,
yeah. He didn't play it straight. But he's not mocking it either. It's fun. I don't know what to tell you. It's a fun cover of a song that I hate. So that's cool.
I was ready to make fun of this, but now I'm kind of interested.
I give Tim Armstrong credit in that, like, I think Tim Armstrong is, I mean, I'm not Mr. Tim Armstrong's the biggest fan. I'm not a huge fan. I enjoy him, though. But I do give Tim Armstrong credit in that I think he's a fan and not a hater of music. And that, like, I think Tim Armstrong is able to see the value in lots of different kinds of music. Like, he did an Elton John cover, Crocodile Rock, which was pretty fun. He did some Rolling Stones covers, which were pretty fun. And so I think he's just really celebrating, like, almost like it was cheesy Rod Stewart, like American Songbook compilation. He's just celebrating music and showing that even if something is cheesy or written by a cheesy artist, it does have some intrinsic value in it. Or he's just saying, well, I'm going to be daring and try to make a legit version of a crappy song. So I give him credit instead of, you know, how many bands put out the same DB album over and over and over. So this is more adventurous than that. So him covering Bryan Adams is more punk rock than some band putting out, you know, some grainy black and white album where they scream about how they're being oppressed, you know?
Huh. But what if they're really oppressed?
Well, then that's, like, if you're in Cuba and you're doing it, that's even more punk rock. You see, if you're not oppressed and you're singing about you're being oppressed, that's kind of punk rock. If you're not oppressed and you're singing Crocodile Rock in the oppressed audience, then that's punk rock. But if you actually are oppressed and singing about being oppressed, that's even more punk rock.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know, this is really fun. And there's a part of my brain with this, when it comes to the Tim Armstrong solo stuff, where, like, on the one hand, you know, I have a lot of, like, from my teenage years, kind of, like, long-standing affinity for Tim and for Rancid and for a lot of the stuff that they did. On the other hand, I've crossed that hump where he's done enough things that I really don't like that I don't give him a pass for some of his more awkward vocal transgressions that I may have done back when I was like totally in love with everything that he was doing. So I have a hard time sitting through the really goofy Tim mumbling these days. I don't know. I don't know if I could do 36 tracks of this.
Some of the tracks are like old school Tim where he actually sings. Some of these are mumblers. So you do have to wade through some shit to get to the good stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a thing. There's going to be lots more of these. Is he still doing these? Is he still doing these song a day things, or are they just focusing on the Rancid record now?
You know, I don't know. Why don't we look that up? But in the meantime, let's play a hot track. I've got a pretty cool track. I think we're all fans of this band. I've got a hot track from Effed Up. Adam, I know you're a fan, right?
I am a huge fan.
And Ricky, I know you're a fan, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, they just put out Year of the Dragon. Phenomenal. I think it's tied for my second favorite Effed Up record with Year of the Pig. I mean,
Please play Year of the Dragon.
Well, we won't because that's 18 minutes, but we will play one of the B-sides. This is Effed Up doing I Wanna Be a Yank, which is a cover of The Cardboard Brains. It's the B-side of Year of the Dragon. Great record. If you like Effed Up, you'll love this. If you like their more punk rock stuff, you'll love this record. This is on Tank Crimes record. Effed Up's going to be at the Tank Crimes Squeeze Fest with Kicker, which The Shrine, Negative Approach, so many awesome bands. That's late mid-April, and this is on Tank Crimes Records. Effed Up doing I Wanna Be a Yank from Year of the Dragon. Punk News Podcast, and actually, I was so overcome with how rocking this song is, I forgot to look up on whether or not the Tim Armstrong Song a Day project is still going on.
How long have they been talking about the new Rancid record for? At least a year, hasn't
basically it? The day after the last one came out because it was so bad.
Wait, what was that? Domino's?
Yeah, that's Domino's fall. They fell all right.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
There is always. I don't think it always feels like there's always enough time between Rancid records that you can completely forget the prior one and the problems that the prior one had. Like, there's enough time for like hope to reemerge and for you to go, I remember why I liked these guys. Let's do this. So
that
is planned. It is entirely planned.
Song a Day is no longer going on, so Song a Day is over.
Well,
that must mean they're recording the
you
new
just like you, you break out to Brian Adams and you just drop the mic and leave, I guess.
the last, he did a whole bunch of versions, which are basically like dubs. So the last one he recorded before doing a whole bunch of dubs was Saturday. Oh wait, no, that one was a version too. Damn, he's been doing versions. I mean, honestly, that's kind of weak. Just all versions, you know. So the last recording he did was, man, he's been doing versions for like 3 months. So he did, well, whatever, it doesn't even matter. He did like 3 months of versions. Let's keep moving on this Punk News podcast. Punk News, I mean, This Is Hardcore 2014 has announced the lineup. This Is Hardcore is a festival almost every year, I think, in Philadelphia, where they play all, they have a bunch of hardcore bands, sometimes heavy metal, sometimes punk rock. This year's festival will take place July 24 to 27, and playing there will be Converge, Madball, Blacklisted, Title Fight, Code Orange, Kids, and some other bands. The Kids might be, Ringworm is going to be there, Cobust, Alpha and Omega, CIV or Civ, I don't know how you pronounce it, one of those two, Noisem, which is a hot new band, and so those bands are going to be there. Blast is going to be there, which is cool. So, are you guys into the tough, mean, nasty stuff? Would you go had you the ability to go?
See, I don't think I would. There's enough on this that I don't quite connect with that I feel like I'd be like hanging out through a bunch of bands that I don't quite get to see the few gems that I know.
Killswitch Engage is going to be there, Adam. Killswitch Engage.
Now hold on, I'm looking at this list of bands. The Explosion, like it's like the punk rock band The Explosion. Is that who that is?
Are you thinking of The Exploited?
No, I'm thinking of like the pop punk band The Explosion that, you know, released some really, really regrettable major label cleaned up albums after being kind of critical darlings with their first few things and then basically breaking up because no one cared anymore. That Explosion.
Could be. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know that band.
I didn't even think they were a thing anymore. And if they were, this is totally not the kind of festival I would expect them to play. I'm going to find this out while we're talking. But anyways, yeah, okay, so apparently The Explosion are playing this. That's weird. There is the 20th anniversary set for Madball's Set It Off at this. That's, you know, if you're an NYHC fan, that could be a big deal. So if you're like Toby Morse, you're really excited. What do you guys think? Ricky, is this your thing?
Not really. I mean, I'd consider going for Title Fight, which is here. But other than that, like, I'm not really into, this looks more like metal almost.
Yeah, this is like metal hardcore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I once went to Summer Slaughter, and just because
Summer
I was
Slaughter!
A friend, yeah, literally, a friend of mine just dragged me, and I'm like, and I couldn't get into it. I would much rather save the money for Fest.
I thought last year's lineup was awesome. Last year they had Gwar, they had Tragedy. I think they had a couple other bands that I really, really. I think Cro-Mags might have been there. I would have loved to go last year. This year. I mean, I live in Philadelphia, but I mean, honestly, there's nothing here that's really going to pull me over. But I mean, honestly, we're not really the audience for this. I mean, I guess with these kind of festivals, so many of these bands sound the same. It just gets boring, you know?
All right. I've confirmed my thing, cutting you off. It is the frickin' Explosion are playing This Is Hardcore. That is so weird to me.
I would go for Blast, but I'm actually going to see like their first show in Santa Cruz here in a little while, so I don't know. Bad Luck 13 is going to be there. Nails, but yeah. So
okay,
I mean,
bigger question related to this: do we not give this kind of hardcore enough play on Punk News?
We probably don't. Honestly, we probably should.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is, see, any genre that is very like hardcore is very walled in. Either you're in hardcore or you're not to some degree. So in any genre like that, like ska, for example, ska has a lot of great bands, but there's even more terrible bands. So with hardcore, there are some really clever hardcore bands. Like I saw Cold World. I thought they were kind of cool. Blast is cool. But there's so many other bands that are just so bad or bland or boring that they seem to represent the genre when maybe they do or maybe they don't. But the really good bands kind of get drugged down with them. For example, Integrity would fit in here. And I think Integrity is one of the greatest hardcore bands there is. Not the greatest, but one of the greatest. But, I mean, they're way different than these bands, but they would be on a bill like this.
Honestly, the lineup you talked about from last year sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up real quick. Last year was awesome. But I couldn't go because I think I was in California at the time. So...
I would have loved to have seen Guar. That's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, probably not. let's see. Here, this is Hardcore Fest 2013. Here we go. Here from 2013. Here was the. I like how we're talking about a lineup from a year ago on the news podcast. But we might as well because this is one I really, really would have enjoyed. Here's who was on. This is Hardcore Fest 2013. The people on the fest were, well, Kid Dynamite, I'm not a huge fan, but people like that band. Kid Dynamite, Kill Your Idols, Tragedy, Modern Life is War, H2O, 7 Seconds, Ringworm, Guar, Negative Approach. See, this is more my, Paint It Black. See, that's much more my speed, you know? Ceremony. Are you guys there?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have had a blast last year. And actually, Maryland Death Fest last year was insane. I really, really wanted to go, but I couldn't. But, oh, my God, Maryland Death Fest last year was awesome. It was at Maryland Death Fest last year was Melvins, Venom. Who else was there? I think Tragedy might have been there, too. Sleep was there. Oh, man, it was so awesome last year. I couldn't go. Anyways, so the fact... Tell you what, Punk News Podcast listeners, what hardcore bands should we listen to? Like, who should we check out that is, like, you know, extreme, kind of like Nails or whatever, that is really, really good? Email us at podcast@punknews.org. Speaking of another band that is very divisive, Flaming Lips have released Flaming Side of the Moon. It's sort of like an ambient album that syncs up to Dark Side of the Moon as well as The Wizard of Oz, because there's rumors that Dark Side of the Moon syncs up to Wizard of Oz. It was revealed this was actually sort of like an April Fool's joke, but I'm not exactly sure what the joke is. Like, the joke is that they made this album, but I mean, like this is something the Flaming Lips would and could do and did, so I don't see how it's like an April Fool's gag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's funny, if you look at the comments on the SoundCloud stream, a lot of people are... You know, they're going back and forth on this. Like, there's one near the end where someone's like, yeah, I think we've all just been pwned by the Flaming Lips.
But I mean, like, what's the joke, you know?
I don't think there is a joke. I think this is something that they would do.
They revealed that it was an April Fool's prank through funnyordie.com. Like, Funny or Die, like, hired them to do this. But I don't see what the joke is.
Well, no, but what I mean is that, like, they're the kind of people that would actually then do it. Like, whether it's necessary or not, they would then try to actually do it, I guess.
Have you guys ever tried to sync up Dark Side of the Moon to Wizard of Oz?
No, but I heard it does work.
I did it once. It actually really kind of might work. Like when Dorothy's like falls off the railing into the pig pen, the music changes. It's like happy, it becomes dark. When the Wicked Witch of the West is flying back and forth, the stereo, like the panning, follows the Wicked Witch flying from left to right. It's pretty crazy.
I just have a hard time believing like they sat down and mapped out the whole movie musically.
Well, it's only the first 45 minutes.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah. 42 minutes, actually. But the Flaming Lips, have they overused their wacky / weirdness? Have they wacky and weirded everyone out?
I think if they had a lot of imitators, then it might get that way. But they're clearly doing their own thing. I think that, you know, people that are really into the Flaming Lips are, you know, they're in it for the weird. So
It looks like punk rock. And punk rock has always had a strange association with the Flaming Lips. Flaming Lips started out as a sort of punk rock band or post-punk. Then they kind of distanced themselves from the punk rock audience by playing Wish You Were Here live, so the punk rocks hated them. Then it kind of circled back around with Yoshimi. But now it seems like the kids in punk rock hate the Flaming Lips again.
I there used to be a lot more that we would talk about them on the site. I remember back in the early years of Punk News, they were mentioned all the time, and no one really, you know, it was clear they were us going a little bit off, you know, off the script, off genre, talking about them, but no one really ever complained about it. I feel like they do more now.
I think the Flaming Lips are pretty punk rock, to tell you the truth, or at least post-punk.
I think it's one of those things where, like, if you're young and you're getting into punk rock and it really means something to you, and then you come on to Punk News and we're talking about a Flaming Lips song and you go and you pull it up and it is completely not what you register yourself as punk rock. I can see why those people get a little bit, you know, they get a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for here? Angry, because of that.
I honestly haven't been following this band. I couldn't really get into them when people would tell me to listen to it. I just passed.
Are you two punks, Ricky?
No, it's just I just.
I
couldn't,
think you're
I
two
just,
punks, Ricky. How
maybe
many,
that?
How many Liberty Spikes do you have right now?
Two.
Do you have a leather jacket with the Casualties or the Addicts on the back of your leather jacket?
No, I'm not that punks.
So you're just kind of punks.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Well. Speaking of something that the kids are really into, is it looks like Chris Farron, a longtime Punk News favorite, and Jeff Rosenstock, longtime Punk News favorite, have formed a new band. Although it really seems more like a project than a band. The band is called Antarctigo Vespucci. It's a play on words from Americo Vespucci. And they've got a new album coming out. They released the first single. The single is called "I'm Giving Up on You Too." And here's what Chris Farron said. Jeff and I have been talking about making a full-length thing together for a while. We both had some time in February, so I flew up and stayed with him for a week. Also, a lot of other great punk celebrities got involved. Benny from Gaslight played drums. Lars Stevenson sang backups. Mike Campbell played bass on a song. And Casey Lee of Fake Problems ripped out a solo. It's a fun little thing. Did you guys check out this tune? Did you like this tune? What did you guys think?
I'm a fan of Chris Farron, his whole wacky internet persona. I like Fake Problems a lot. This was fun in that I like hearing Chris sing on things because I think he's pretty good at it. This was probably a little bit more sugary than I need to consume on a regular basis. But given that it's just kind of like a fun, wacky thing, then, you know, that's cool. I heard it once and I was like, okay, I don't need to like repeat that or anything. That's cool.
It's not D-beat enough for you. Do you want to go back to listening to Disclose or Disfear?
Something that starts with Dis. And that would be good. Dispatch. I know, this whatever. This was cool. I'm a big Bob Music Industry fan, so there's no reason why I shouldn't like this thing. It's just, you know, it's fun, it's light, it's not really that deep. It's really, really catchy, probably to a fault. I'll give it that.
I really like this. I pre-ordered this. I
not too punk for this, huh, Ricky? Hmm.
Not at all. Actually, someone said, someone commented something I totally agreed with. They said this album is going to be a great summertime jam. That said everything. I'm really curious to see what the rest of this album sounds like. Because I'm a fan. I'm also a fan of Fake Problems, so. Absolutely.
I actually kind of dug this, Adam. I agree that it is pretty sugary, but honestly, it sounded kind of new wavy to me. I was kind of digging it. I felt new wave. I thought it went on for a minute too long. I think this could have been a great 2-minute banger. 3 minutes maybe is a little too long, but I dug this. So I'll be excited to hear the rest of the project. So
that may have been my problem. Mm. Now that I think about it, if it was, you know, it was a little bit more, you know, done once it had made its points, then I probably would have been cool with it. But I think just by the end, I was just like, yeah, all right. That was there. I mean, that said, given the people involved, I totally want to hear this record and see what they do. There's every indicator that they could get super weird on this in the best way. So, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing that. If it all sounds like this, I'm not going to be totally cool, because, you know, how much of that do you need?
True. Yeah, I mean, like too much sugar is just too much sugar. What we need is more D-beat kind of style. Like, if they had, like, 3 D-beat tunes after this tune, it'd be perfect.
The punk news word of the week is D-beat. So, all right, I'm going to jump into a story here. John, you're going to have something to say about this, so I'll do the read. Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine have announced a massive string of U.S., Canadian, and European dates running from now through June. Many dates are going to feature Negative Approach, and there's also a few select dates are going to include bands like Death Hymn No. 9, Pins of Light, NOFX, Disaster Strikes, and Mischief Brew. So you can find the full list of Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine dates on Punk News. All of this kicks off, looks like the 4th of April in Santa Rosa, California. And this thing does a bunch of California dates, jumps over to France, rages through France for a little while, hits Germany with NOFX, plays the Monster Bash Festival in Germany with, I have no idea, and then pops back to the U.S. and Canada to play with Negative Approach. So there's a whole bunch of dates that they're doing. You really have to go find all these things here. John, this is your show.
Yeah, honestly, like I felt like this tour was made for me. I'll be at the Philadelphia date. I'm super excited. I'm a huge Jello fan. I'm a Mischief Brew fan, and I'm a pretty big Negative Approach fan. Like this is like John Festival. It's like the bands are all all three of those bands are very varied from each other, and I'm a big fan of all of them. So I mean, it's just going to be maybe my like it, factoring in all the bands, it might be my favorite show of 2014. You know, so I'm super excited. Mischief Brew's got a new album coming out. Jello, I don't think Jello's got a new album coming out. Negative Approach is just kicking out the jams. But let me tell you, I've seen Jello, I think, 11 times. Listen, kids, now is the time to see Jello. Honestly, the Guantanamo School Medicine Band is better than it's ever been. And I think, aside from the Melvin and Jello's tours, I think these will be Jello Biafra's best live dates. I've got a couple Dead Kennedys bootlegs, and they're good, but they're not really that tight, and some of the songs are kind of slow. Live, they play Dead Kennedys tunes, they play Lard tunes, they play a couple Jelvin's tunes, they play Guantanamo School Medicine's tunes, they play them at like double speed. It's awesome. So, I mean, Jello Biafra is an awesome, loud, wild, fast, energetic rock, punk rock show to see. So I'm super excited for this.
Oh, now I feel like I need to go to that Santa Rosa show.
Have you seen Jello Biafra yet, Ricky?
No.
You got to go. I mean, honestly, like you know, we always talk, like we talk about this before. I mean, Jello's not that old. He's only like 53. But like, you know, people pass away after a while. So now's the time to see Jello, because he is, like, he's 53. He's in his live prime, no question. He's kicking ass live.
I might need to, you know, now I'm thinking about getting that ticket. Yeah, I might go to the Santa Rosa show then. Because, I mean, Jello did help me out through high school. I don't need to go into the story.
Will you, like, do your math homework?
No.
Ricky, I'll take your math homework. Thanks, Jello.
No, he did. He did. I just was, like, in a socially, like, weird situation, and I'm like, fuck, who should I ask? And so I sent an email to him, and he just said, he got back to me. It was awesome. Really helped me get through, like, my junior year. It was really cool.
Oh, that was nice of him. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very cool. But I might go see this. I might just blow off the
One thing about Jello is a lot of people in punk rock talk a very tall game. They talk a very tough game. But I find 85% of these guys that talk a tough game don't walk the walk. But let me tell you, from what I've seen, Jello Biafra walks the walk. Like this is the story I told a couple years ago on the Punk News podcast, and it's always stuck with me. I mean, I don't think Alternative Tentacles are making that much money now, but before the whole record crash, Alternative Tentacles was doing pretty well. You know what I mean? Like, they were clearly making a couple million a year at least, right? You know what kind of car? And I saw Zelda Biafra drive up to his own gig. You know what he was driving?
What?
The most beat-ass early 80s Volvo you've ever seen. This thing was like you couldn't, you really, if you were trying to sell it, no one would buy it. He was driving this beat-ass car. And on top, actually even more so, I mean, that just goes to show that, like, he's not, like, so, you know, some blowing his money, you know, like not living what he's talking. But further is, a lot of bands talk about equal rights and social equality and stuff. And then you look at their T-shirts, and their T-shirts are made in Panama or India or Pakistan, and sweatshops. All Alternative Tentacles T-shirts are made in the USA, which I think speaks volumes. So...
Yeah, actually, when I went to the that record label fair a month ago or so, I bought an Alternative Tentacle shirt from the booth, and I looked just to see if it was actually made, and it was, yeah, they just there's like a whole like little warning on the label saying like made in the USA, no sweatshop labor went into this T-shirt at all.
Yeah, so all these guys are saying we want to treat people fairly, we respect human rights, but you know they're selling sweatshop T-shirts, and meanwhile Joe's walking the walk or walking the talk. What's the phrase? Talking the walk, walking the talk, talking the talk,
walking the walk. Talk, walk. Yeah,
something like that. So anyway, I've huge respect for Joe Biafra. So listen, kids, Johnny G. This show gets Johnny G's seal of approval.
And John, I'm going to continue on the stories from the mind of Johnny G.
I'm excited for this one. I'm super excited for this one too.
I know. It's like you chose the stories for this week's show or something like that, isn't it? So Annabella Lewin, the original Bow Wow Wow vocalist, has announced a short Californian tour. On the tour, she'll be performing her own material as well as songs from across the Bow Wow Wow discography. You can stay tuned because we're going to soon be posting an interview with her that, well, John, I'll let you describe the interview here.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, the reason I brought this up is because we've got a lot of cool Annabella stuff coming up. The kids might not even know who Annabella Wynn is. Ricky, do you know the song "I Want Candy"?
I do. Actually, my dad showed me Bow Wow Wow a long time ago, and he was really into them when they were big.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I do have that one song.
Go quick.
Do you want to hold me?
Oh, yeah, that's from the second album. That's from Aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize this. Bow Wow Wow is actually like a really, really punk rock band. Malcolm McLaurin managed them in the beginning. They stole members from Adam and the Ants, but their songs are actually like really punk rock. They've got a song about urban warfare. They've got a song about rape. They've got a song about stealing music from the radio. They're like a really, really punk rock band. And the actual music is really great. We actually played one of their rare tracks a while ago. So live, I'm super excited to see her. I saw her once before. It was awesome. What's really cool is me and Sound Guy Nairman are going to go, which that's awesome because Sound Guy Nairman never goes to concerts. So this is going to be a blast. But more importantly is in a little while, actually maybe the time you hear this interview, I mean this podcast, is we're going to be running an interview, really the first interview ever where she's directly addressed any of this stuff. She was involved in a child pornography thing because like their first album cover has her nude on it. But she, I mean, you can't see anything, but she's naked. And she was only 14 at the time. She's going to be talking about getting banned from the radio for having a song promoting home taping. She's going to be talking about Malcolm McLaurin itself. And I think this is really the first time she's ever directly addressed any of this in the interviews. So the interview functioned as sort of like a history lesson for the kids about Bow Wow Wow, who I think is an underappreciated and unacknowledged band. So it's going to be a super cool interview, and I'm so excited to run it at Punk News.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're going up to Sebastopol. I didn't know bands even knew like would go there.
Well, it's at the Hot Monk Tavern, Ricky. You can't pass by the Hot Monk Tavern.
I guarantee you it will be filled with hippies if it's in Sebastopol.
I saw her. We don't want to drag out tonight's podcast for too long. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, I saw her live once before. It's awesome. If you get the chance to see her, go. It's only like $12. And honestly, you will be amazed about how great, like, she still sounds phenomenal, but you'll be amazed about how great the band actually is and how I think people's perceptions of the band are wrong. And rightly so, because they had like one big mega hit in the 80s, but the band is that's not representative of the band. So I highly recommend this tour. So let's wrap up our last story. Adam, I suspect you'll have a lot to say about this. Unfortunately, well, you know, we had a lot of happy articles. Anymore, we're almost always going to have a sad article in the podcast, just as the nature of the universe. Dave Gregg of DOA passed away. He was in DOA's classic era, I think 1980 to 1988. He's on Hardcore 81. He's on March into the 80s, I believe. So he passed away. He was also on the Real McKenzies. So he passed away. And, well, I mean, what else is there to say about that? Then the guy passed away. I mean, what else can I say, you know?
Yeah, Dave was super young. I mean, you talk about like how young, you know, Jello is. This guy was like right out of the same age. He was 54. Word has it, and this came out since our article, that it was a massive heart attack that did him in, I guess. He was in California at the time when he died, visiting his family. It's sad. Guy was young. He was still playing in punk bands. He was, you know, doing stuff with the Real McKenzies, and they're all, you know, quite a few years his junior there. So he was still at it for a number of years. So completely sucks that, you know, we lost another one there. There was a quote from Joe Keithley, Joe Shithead there of DOA, that came out again after we posted this. And Joe said, "It is with unbelievable sorrow that I have to talk about the passing of Dave Gregg. He died of a heart attack this past weekend. I can't even come close to being able to express strong enough condolences for his wife, Kathy, and the rest of Dave's family." And there's all kinds of comments like that from guys that were in the, you know, especially from a lot of guys that were in like that, you know, early 80s Vancouver punk scene that was really so influential on all of the punk music that was that happened in the rest of Canada and then down the West Coast there into the US. So yeah, sad that we have lost someone so young that was still playing like that. And the stuff that Dave was on is, I think, what a lot of people these days think about DOA, and they may not be, you know, too in tune with a lot of the stuff that the band's doing now, but anything that you can ascribe to being, you know, the classic era of DOA, when it was Joe Keithley and Randy Rampage and Chuck Biscuits, you know, Dave Gregg was one of them at the time. So, you know, he was one of the guys when this band was really impacting people. So
I kind of feel like DOA in general doesn't quite get enough props. I feel like DOA should get more props than they get.
I think it's one of those things like that, because they never really went away. And Joe's kind of kept soldiering on and doing his thing and doing it in a way that was always sort of still on the same.
Wait,
what am I trying to think here? The same. Yeah. Like I want to say plateau, but I don't want to make it sound like it's a negative thing. Like with Sudden Death Records and everything, Joe had, you know, what worked for him, and he didn't stretch kind of outside of that sound and of that fan base, and he kept kind of playing to it, and all the power to him, because that's what he likes and that's what he wants to do and that's what he wants to do on stage. It just, when you do that, you know, for a number of years, I think it makes kind of like the music critics of the world, it makes it easier for them to just go, yeah, okay, DOA is still doing what DOA does and whatever their lineup is these days, we get it, right? And it's unfortunate that happens to a lot of bands that just kind of like keep at it consistently, that don't take a break enough for, you know, nostalgia to really kick in. But you know, would it be different if DOA recorded, like, you know, two or three classic early things that they did, and then they just went away for an extended period of time, or let's say Joe went off and did, you know, a bunch of weird art projects, would this be a different situation? Yeah, probably, because, you know, nostalgia sets in at that point. But, you know, having been, I think, like the one punk news person that's actually given a lot of like DOA's modern day stuff a listen, it's, you know, you can kind of get why you know, the music critics aren't really standing up and taking notice of it in particular, because like it sounds like DOA songs. And if you're not into that at this point, if you're not, you know, I get why Pitchfork doesn't care, I guess, is where I'm going with it, which, you know, I don't want to make it sound like a big criticism, because, you know, they're still doing what they do, and that's pretty punk rock. It's just, you know, they're not making high art, and they're not trying to.
Yeah. Well, I think we all agree, DOA rules, and Dave Gregg was starting on some classic recordings. Ricky, do you have anything you want to add?
You know, I was kind of shocked this happened too. I mean, I haven't always been really into DOA. I really like their older stuff. But no, this sucks. It's bad.
All right. Well said. So let's close out tonight with a song. This got emailed to us by a band. The band is called Boardroom Heroes. They're from Maryland. They've got an EP out, and this is off that, and it is called Never Ready. Wake up to regrets and bad intentions. More tired now than when I fell asleep. And I just can't help but feel like wasted. Another chance to get quiet, but that's not me. You give anything when it rolls apart. Up this week's Pug News podcast. As always, Adam White, thanks for being here. Thanks for bringing your expertise about Canadian punk rock to the Pug News podcast.
I do what I can. Actually, you know what? I got to give a shout out to someone here because this made me feel super good. Last week on the show, or the week before, I don't know, one of the most recent weeks, we played a song. I played a song at the end of the show by a band from Ontario called Stuck Out Here. And someone tweeted me after the show and was like, hey, who is that band that you played at the end? And I gave him the name again. And then I got back something that was said, great, I just went and bought their EP. And I was like, oh, well, that's fantastic. That's why we do things like this. So, you know, if you like things from bands you hear on this show, go buy their shit.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah,
I agree. Ricky, as always, thanks for coming in. Thanks for bringing your West Coast flavor to our East. Well, Adam and I are both on the East Coast mainly. So thanks for bringing the Cali flavor to this East Coast podcast.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, thanks for being the first Mozambiquean on the Punk News podcast, the first third gender trisexual on the Punk News podcast.
Oh,
I appreciate your unique perspective.
This is net. Oh, God, the comments.
This is John Gentile, and thanks again to Sarah Guy Nerman, and we'll see you next week.